Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Like Fiona, I want to take you on a few stories, a few journeys. And I want to actually get you a little bit uncomfortable. I'm actually hoping at some point in today's discussion, there will be people who will think, I'm not sure I'm with you on that. But I want to challenge you that I do want to influence the way you think. And I want to influence the way you talk, because preventing trauma is so absolutely important to the future of our community and our world. We have heard some amazing stuff about the brilliant work we can do at once trauma has happened. And Fiona and I are agreed on the importance of prevention. But there is something pretty powerful about actually stopping injury from happening, and something pretty powerful about when injury does happen. So I wonder if you've got a tally like this in your brain. This is the number of people you saved this year. These are the lives that you saw that grey, sallow, lifeless person come back to life. Perhaps you decompressed their tension pneumothorax. Perhaps you bounced up and down on that chest and cycled through team member after team member as you exhausted every effort, and then you saw that life restored. It's a drug. It's amazing. And maybe you did that once, maybe you did it twice, maybe you did it five times. You didn't do it 100 times. And it's not enough. It's not enough to save that life, because that is incredibly important for that child, for that person. But it's not enough, because there are other children that are dying. And if we want to take childhood death seriously, then we start with trauma. Because it is not cancer, it is not heart disease that kills more children in our country and many other countries than anything else, but it's injury. Injury is the number one, by a country mile, cause of death in our children. So we must save lives. But we need to save more than lives. Injury is the number one cause of disability in our country, in children. So it's not enough to save a life, even though that is an incredibly powerful, important contribution to a life. Because sometimes we're saving them to a life that is difficult, and other times their life was never in threat, but their livelihood, their life that they will be living, has been threatened, has been damaged, has been changed forever. We talk about life redefining injuries. And wouldn't we love to be like in the app or the game that you might play? Wouldn't you love to press pause on a moment? Wouldn't you love to go in there and bump up the health value of that player? Wouldn't you love to intercept and buy another life or buy more health in that moment? That's fantasy. We're not there. You can't do it, but you can. You absolutely can do it. Because you can have conversations with people. You can share your passion. You can share simple truths which reduce the likelihood of injury. You can stop the event happening if there's someone who's going to make a better decision that morning than they otherwise would because of the conversations you've had with them. But we don't like those conversations. They make us uncomfortable. They make you uncomfortable. It's easier just to actually pick up your children, walk past that behaviour, go home and just be grateful that your children are healthy. You hope that day, you hope. We live ignorant to the amazing risk of injury that confronts us and our children. So these are conversations worth having, and there are numbers that are worth talking about. because we have been doing so many good, laudable, fantastic, powerful injury prevention things in our country. We are world leaders. And do you know the impact we have had on injury in childhood by number for more than the last 10 years? Complete epidemiological asystole. It's complete flatline. We've got kids wearing helmets, fantastic. I'm the guy who stops on the bike path and challenges people why they're not wearing a helmet. I'm that guy. My wife hates that. She thinks someone's gonna punch me and then I might be that guy. We laugh, but his name, some of you know it. He was a neurosurgeon. He challenged someone, now he's dead. Injury killed him. Sorry to kill the mood there. We need to be those people. We need to be willing to have those conversations. We put fences around pools. We teach people how to resuscitate. We do all these things. They're really, really important. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm so committed to what we're doing, but it's not enough. Because if it were enough, we would have changed the injury incidents in our country. This wonderful country of liberty and freedom of choice and all the other things that put us at risk. Yeah, I am that guy. I'm that dad. So we need to start somewhere. This is where we start. We need to start convinced, committed, absolutely, unshakably committed to the fact that zero is possible. We're starting where we want to finish. We're believing in a future towards zero. If we don't believe in that, we've already sold out. You've got to be naive, you've got to be fanciful, because it drives you to be a better decision maker. It drives you to be a better friend, a better father, a better mother, a better whoever, and it makes you have conversations you otherwise wouldn't have, because you believe in the future where injury is zero. And we will work so damn hard in the meantime to prevent, to treat, to rehabilitate. But that's where we start. That's what we teach. That's what we smile when we see a bus drive past with a symbol on it towards zero. We say, yeah, that's great. I don't want you to teach it. I want you to preach it. Here I am up in the front, you know, saying all sorts of grandiose things. Be that person. I'm that man. Be that person. Be bold. Because it's absolutely worth it. Because every life you save and every injury you prevent by them never being in that situation is changing a community, changing our nation and our world forever. So what can injure us to the point of life redefining, life taking within 2 hours? What puts 20 children into our emergency departments in Australia every week? So that's 1,000 children every year. Wouldn't we love to just get rid of 1,000 children with significant dangerous injuries from our emergency departments every year? That's not a drop in the ocean. How many classrooms is that? How many future leaders is that? Couldn't we do with a few future leaders? Car keys. Quirky cards that tell you you're looking good when you open it up. TV remotes. Button batteries are all through our houses. I don't know how many of you leave the warfarin on the bedside table, or perhaps get the arsenic and just leave it in the cutlery drawer. Do you do that? Only a crazy person would do that. But we cover our houses with button batteries. 2 hours. I don't know if any of you have taken a button battery out, or you watch a surgeon take a button battery out. I am sweating like I'm in 34 degrees. I can hear them sizzling. I can hear the child's esophagus cooking. And it scares me, so I shake and I quiver, and it's hard enough to pick up that bloody thing down the end of an esophagoscope, because I know that if I get this wrong, that child's life will be redefined forever. There's another reason that number two is here, and that's because in Australia, two children have died. One in Queensland, one here in Victoria. One in 2013 and 2015. And every time you change the button battery in whichever device you have in your home, and you swear because you can't find that stupid small screwdriver that you need to undo the little hatch, and you think, what is this screw doing here? That's what that screw is doing there. Because we said as a society, two is too many. We cannot lose the lives of children because of a stupid button battery. A little shiny, playworthy, attractive little bit of poison. It's unacceptable. So we said, we're going to have campaigns, we're going to change laws, we're going to have consumer control just about button batteries. What a great thing to do. Aren't we a great society? Aren't we brave? Yep. Now, 42 is a much bigger number than 2. And perhaps if you were a nerd like me, you grew up thinking that 42 was the answer to the meaning of life. Yeah, hitchhikers, woo! 42 is not the meaning of life. 42 is the burden of death. 42 children dying since 2001 to 2017. Yep. Let's get real here. Quad bikes. Why is it that after the second death, we didn't say enough is enough? Why didn't we, but we did, campaign, but we did, why didn't we? But you know what didn't happen is society didn't come with us. What did we in trauma, in health, get wrong? Is it not terrible enough that two children died? It clearly is. You're a social media savvy kind of people. If you want to depress yourself like me, you read the comments underneath any of the posts about quad bikes. People say, you know what? 42 children under the age of 16 since 2001, that's only 2.5 children a year. If you don't feel sick right now, then there is something wrong with you. 42 children have died, and where is the consumer regulation? Where is the societal abhorrence at quad bikes? It's in rooms like this, and is it in voices like mine, maybe voices like yours? We need to take that conversation and take it out of this room. So Kirsty and I are going up to Fraser Island, and we've decided to book the family in for a quad bike tour. You going to let that ride? Oh, well, I'm just picking the kids up. I thought I'd just throw them back and give them a few button batteries to munch on. You wouldn't let that ride. You'd say, oh, Oric, awkward, but, you know, button batteries, super dangerous. Oh, that sounds great. Have a great time in Fraser Island. Oh, yeah, you'll love it. Quad bikes, they get you to places you can't go. What a load of rubbish. We have accepted quad bikes as a risk in our society. We've accepted them on farms, even though there are alternatives. And children don't tend to get damaged through quad bikes on farms. Let me just put that little theory to rest. And certainly in Victoria, it's the wannabe farmers, okay? They live pretty close to where we are right now. They have properties a little bit further away, but actually not real farms. They wear R.M. Williams. I have an R.M. Williams belt on. I'm only not wearing my moleskins because my wife thought I needed an upgrade. So we need to have that conversation, because 42 children is a national shame. So when you hear about your friends going up to their property and jumping on a quad bike, you have to decide, are you that person? Because if you're not, I'm a bit with Fiona here, I'm not sure that I have the breath for you. But you don't have the heart for me and the heart for my children. And that would trouble me deeply. Seven. Is seven the age of enlightenment? No. In this proud country, seven is the age of entitlement. Why? Because when you're seven, you can legally get rid of the booster seat and sit in the big boy, big girl seat. You can even pretty easily fulfill the laws to sit in the front seat. Awesome. Now you can have the controls of the radio. Hands up here who has a child who has passed their seventh birthday. Hands up here, keep your hands up, who might drive a child at some point who's passed their seventh birthday. So a whole lot of us have had to make some decisions. You cannot safely put the vast majority of seven-year-old children in an adult car seat. You just can't do it. And in fact, if you have the crash that day, their life might be changed or taken forever because of the seatbelt that they're wearing. That's messed up. That's seriously messed up. Children take this very seriously. They take it very seriously, and they know that when they turn seven, they're allowed to make that change. Really? They're the boss? So your children have the car keys, do they? And they tell you where you sit, and they tell you where they're going to sit? When you've got more than three children that you need to transport and you've only got a five-seater car, what are you going to do? Which child do you not love enough that you're going to put them in the front seat or not put them in the booster? If you talk about enlightenment, that's what they're going to be enlightened to. They're going to be enlightened to the fact that you don't value their lives as much as you value yours or your hip pocket or your time or your cred or kudos with the other parents. Because you don't know that you're not going to have a crash that day. I don't know how you're going with your crash prediction model. I think we're going pretty badly because we haven't actually predicted one ever, but we know the risk is there. And if you don't believe that, then don't wear your seatbelt because you know that day you're not going to have a car crash. Just save your seatbelt for the days that you think you might have a car crash. So you cannot let your seven-year-old child or any seven-year-old child drive in your car without an appropriate size restraint. You just can't do it. Because if that day you have a car crash, you will regret that moment forever. You will feel sick in your stomach like you're starting to feel sick now forever. Because crying children is bad enough. Fiona, you and I agreed on this. There is nothing like watching a parent who has lost a loved one. It is the worst cry. And if you have ever shared that moment and cried that despair yourself, it is only worse. Because when you cried that, you never wanted anyone to go through what you are feeling in that moment. It is utter despair. And you think, I will give everything I have not to let a single parent know what it feels in my heart to lose someone I love. Oh, yeah, it's Warwick here. Look, I said I'd take Johnny home, but I love my three kids a lot. So I'm going to put Johnny in the front seat. Is that all right? Oh, good, excellent. See you in 20 minutes. Would you make that phone call? You'd never make that phone call. It's too awkward. It's too uncomfortable. But we make decisions that look like that phone call all the time. If you have a seven-year-old child, You can take the number 7 and talk about that, but take the number 145 and talk about that. Because 145 centimetres is the height your child must be to fit in a normal adult car seat, normally sized. There's changes you can do to make it better. It's called the 5-step test. Google it. It's worth a read. But 145 keeps your children alive. There's a number to talk about. So when you watch the little kid walk past you and get in the car at pickup time, do you just let that go? Or do you start a conversation? Because that conversation starts a conversation, starts a conversation, starts a conversation, starts a conversation. You've saved 100 lives. You've saved 1,000 lives. You've saved 20,000 lives. You've saved more lives than you've ever known about. And all you had the guts to do was have a conversation. Now, this is the point at which I'm going to lose you if I haven't lost you already. It's a pretty lonely feeling when you lose everyone, but 1 is not the loneliest number. Trampolining? Ring a bell? I'll tell you what's lonely. Lonely is having a leg fracture as a child because you lose an entire term of school. And you're likely to need to repeat that year because you'll be so far out of school that that's the loneliest you can be. And if you wanted to increase, imagine being on a trampoline and you could say, you could reach out to that child who's about to break their leg and you could go, I'd like to reduce your risk 5 times. Now, you wouldn't actually reach out to the child who's not about to break their leg and say, I'd like to increase your risk 5 times. That would make you like a supervillain, okay? So we're going to be over here being the good guy, and we're going to say, I want to stop you from being 5 times more likely to have a broken leg on a trampoline. How do you do that? 1 child bouncing. Not all the children at the party bouncing. They're having a great time. Oh, yeah, it's Warwick here. We thought we'd get the kids around. We'd just blindfold them and make them run randomly at each other all the way through the back garden. Or what will Kirstie and I be doing? Chardonnay inside. I tell you what's lonely. It's not being supervised on a trampoline. So we had a child at the children's. She was number 1. She was only 1 on the trampoline. But that's not good enough if you don't have a supervisor because she broke her neck. And then she lay on that trampoline for hours until she was found. And yet we have so many backyards and we go to so many barbecues and the parents are all sitting there having a nice drink. No one is watching the children. We see multiple bounce injuries escalating every year, year after year. Why is that? Because no one's having the conversations. I am definitely that father, to the point that I now go to events and I am met by like a little party of people and they've got the beer ready and possibly something to eat and they say, Warwick, have this and just go and sit over here. This has happened to me. I'm not making this up because it's funny. And I'm like, yep, what's going on? And there's like, there's a trampoline over there. You're not going to enjoy it. Where do you go with that? Well, what you do is you feel really awkward. You try and say, and then your wife goes, And then it's 10 minutes later, you look after the blood nose. We've got to have those conversations. We cannot put our children on the trampolines together. We just can't do it. Because if we can't get it right, how are we going to expect everyone else to get it right? And if we want our children to have life redefining injuries, then crack on. I can show you pictures of children's legs breaking while they're bouncing with their father. They're not doing anything else. They're just bouncing with their dad. They're having a great time. It's a great parent moment. And bang, their leg just snaps. That is wrong. How's that family moment right now? Pretty awkward. Because that father should be told that there's no reason that their child's leg broke except for the fact that they were bouncing with them. It's all crappy physics. So I don't know how you scored. I don't know how I scored. I gave you five numbers that are worth talking about. I'm not sure whether you notched up the full five, whether you left me at the trampoline. As you can see, I'm pretty full on about these things. That's because I've been messed up by watching so many families torn apart. So you can just stand there and watch this train go by. You can. You don't have to walk out here and have awkward conversations, apart from the fact that that speaker was a bit awkward. But I want you to own your uncomfortable feeling, and I want you to do something about it. I want you to have conversations that will save more lives than you will ever save in your health career, whatever you do, and prevent more injuries. So what do you want to do with this bubble right now? We're not forgetting the bubbles. We all want to pop it. I want you to have that sense about the conversation. You think, oh, brilliant. Here's a conversation I can have. I can talk to them about quad bikes. Pop. 145 centimetres. That's a great number, even though it wasn't on the slide. You're all going to remember it. I'm going to have that conversation. Pop. I want you to go away from today and have conversations you weren't going to have because you were uncomfortable and or didn't have all the numbers in your head. Not 74.8% to some p-value. No. Let's just start with the number 7 or 0 or whatever. Let's have some conversations. Thanks very much.
There should be a parent Olympics. Like when you get to the airport, which dad can change 3 car seats quickly in and out of the car while the kids are jet-lagged and mum's trying to hold them from running into traffic. That'd be a great event. Anyway, we have one question from the Twitter sphere.
So with lack of risk-taking, potentially increasing risk of lifestyle diseases and mental health issues, how do we balance zero injury risk and allowing our kids to take some risks, explore and grow?
Yeah, this is the cotton wool wrapping. Why don't we just stop kids going on high chairs because it's a falls risk? We've got to believe that zero is possible. My children body surf. Not board surf, body surf. Some of your children probably body surf. I rode a horse for a lot of my young life and adult life. And I took intentional decisions to mitigate risk. But it doesn't mean that my life was absent of risk. I don't think that believing that zero is possible is the same as preventing my child or myself from having any risk. I ride a bike to work, partly because I don't quite have the physique that all the other speakers have today. But I think you've got to live in this world, but don't live in the world stupidly. So how does putting your child at risk knowingly, wantingly, how is that acceptable? That's very different to preventing your child from ever being exposed to any risk. So if you put your 7-year-old in the car without a booster seat, unless that child can pass the 5-step test, Google it, it's worth a read, then you are wantingly putting your child at risk. And that's really different. My children play football. They wear a helmet. It's controversial. But I'm making decisions. And I'm happy to review those decisions. I'm happy to sort of have those conversations. But I'm not putting my 7-year-old, who's now 8, and still using a booster seat. So I think that we can discount this argument by saying, oh, but kids will grow up fat and risk averse, and they'll just play computer games all their life. And I do not believe that computer games are risk averse. So let's just dispel that myth straight away from my perspective. But the things that I've chosen for you this morning are the things that if you carry on the way that we are, children that don't need to get hurt will get hurt. I hope I didn't say don't get on the trampoline. I did say don't get on the quad bike. I hope I didn't say that we should prevent our children from ever having risk, but I did say don't give your child a button battery. Don't put it in their play space, don't put it in your cutlery drawer, because you wouldn't do that to a poison. I don't think if we got up and gave a poison safety talk, we would have a lot of people saying, well, how are children going to learn to make decisions if you make all these decisions for them? We don't get that pushback. But if you say put a helmet on a child's head for when they ride a bike, because less controversial than playing football, then people will say, oh, but what if they don't want to ride a bike? Oh, come on. Are we still there? We don't need to be. You can go and chat about it with your friends. And frankly, you can make different decisions to what I've made, if you want, but the conversations you have will be powerful enough to change the direction of injury. I do not want to get up in 10 years' time and give another talk about the fact we've still got epidemiological asystole. That's, by the way, my own phrase. I'm completely capturing that if anyone tries to use it.
Thanks, Warwick. I think that's all we have time for, so give Warwick a big hand.